Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up. It is Monday, May 19th, Victoria Day across our province and here in Vancouver. Hope you got good plans for your day off. Hopefully you have the day off. I know not everyone gets the actual holiday day off. I'm glad I do. But here I am putting this show together for you. Because that's what we do here at CJSF. We got some good stuff lined up for you today, and I hope you will enjoy it. On today's program, we have a report by Danny Nesvadarani about the BC Nursing Union's campaign for a better balance between nurses and stations, nurses and patients. It's called. They're talking about the ratio, and they'll talk about a whole lot of that in the report, the ratio between nurses and patients and how vital that is to patient care and a healthy healthcare system. We also have, another report from Danny as well about a project of the Rick Hansen Foundation about a fully accessible outdoor pleasure boat, small boat, so that getting out on the water can be accessible to everybody. After that, we have, of course, our regular segment with Gardening with Embark. Very important one this week because this is the time to get your summer plants, your summer harvest into the ground if you want to get your production to come before the end of the summer, before it all cools off again. So we're going to be checking in with Pablo about that. And then we'll finish up with an interview from my colleague Peter R.H. With Artin Safai, who is a member of Students for a Democratic University and also a student in SFU's political science department. And they have some issues around NATO and military involvement in the campus, and particularly the political science department here at SFU. All that and more coming up here on Speak Up this morning. So stay tuned. Here we are with Danny's report on the BCNU.
Reporting from Burnaby, BC, this is Danny Nesvadarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. During this year's National Nursing Week, the British Columbia's Nurses Union, or BCNU, has been spreading the word on the Ratios Save Lives campaign. This campaign advocates for better nurse-to-patient ratios, improved working conditions, and higher nurse retention in BC. While the provincial government has put their support behind this campaign, there is still a shortage of nurses within the province. Recently, CJSF spoke with Tristan Newby, the vice president of the BCNU, on the work that the union says still needs to be done to attain the ideal nurse-to-patient ratio in BC, as well as how different levels of government can work together to attain this goal for the province. Please take a listen.
Ratio Saves Lives campaign is a public awareness as well as a member awareness campaign to really socialize the concept that minimum to nurse-patient ratios within the hospital setting and within healthcare more broadly, not only saves the lives of patients, but it also saves the system a considerable amount of money when you look at what we're ending up paying out in overtime for private agencies. Once you have established minimum nurse-patient ratios, the likelihood of mortality and morbidity of patients decreases. And it is within jurisdictions that have rolled these out, I'm specifically calling out California, Oregon, New South Wales, you see an increased investment in nurses elongating their careers, having more satisfaction, and decreased incidences of violence within within healthcare settings.
Where is the progress on it right now? I know the province has put forward their support on this movement, but that was a few months ago now. So where do you think things are heading at the moment?
So back in March of 2024, as well as September of 2024, the provincial government announced what had been negotiated and agreed to. An example of that is if you are presented to a general medical ward within a hospital, you should see that your nurse has no more than four patients assigned to them. So that negotiation took about a year to get to. And then once we had the newly formed government, there is within the Minister of Health's mandate is to advance minimum nurse patient ratios. Where the lag is, so is within the operationalizing of it. So each of the health authorities have been provided, here is your mandate. You need to meet these ratios. And then the health authorities now have a period of time to be able to get to a point where they have these lines created and they have people posting into them. That is where we're finding that there's some delays. So it is an unrealistic expectation that right now that if I go into hospital, I will see, you know, a 1-to-4 ratio. But that is the intention over the course of, you know, the next year or so.
Yeah, I know this is not the only media that you've been doing this week. And one thing I've seen you talk about a lot has to do with focusing on retention, not just recruitment. If you could expand on that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, there have been some efforts, you know, in the right direction, well-intentioned on the part of the government to be investing in recruitment. And you're seeing that with the announcement that came in 2 days ago. One area that we really have been advocating for strongly for years, both within the health authority and at the ministry level, is that we're in such a deficit of nurses in today's system. Like, we know that there's a minimum of 6,000 nurses that we're short within the province of British Columbia. And then when you factor in the additional workload that we're going to need for the full implementation of minimum nurse patient ratios, you're looking at more like 10, right? And when you have a system that nurses, their 5-year attrition rate is 50%, you know that there's something wrong with a system that doesn't support the people that are coming into it. If half of them after a 4-year education are choosing to leave within 5 years. And until health authorities and until the ministry has turned their mind to prioritizing the retention of those folks, there's no way that we're going to be able to recruit our way out of this, this situation.
So one of the things that brought this campaign to my attention was that one of your lobby coordinators in the Simon Fraser region presented on the nurse to patient ratio movement at New Westminster City Council. And I'm wondering what your perspective is on what municipal governments throughout the Lower Mainland and throughout BC in general, what role they play in supporting.
Yeah, thanks. So Melissa and I work together. So I'm the provincial lobby coordinator within British Columbia, and the Simon Fraser region is actually my home turf. So the 2025, one of our main initiatives was conceptualizing the idea of ratios to folks. And we know that our government has committed to their implementation. But along that process, we need to ensure that the general public as a whole has an understanding of what ratios are. And what's involved in establishing ratios goes far beyond, you know, the Minister of Health making some announcement about, look how great it is. We've got 1-to-3 here, 1-to-4 there. And there will also come a time where we need to turn our mind to how are we enforcing these ratios? And that, for that, we really need to ensure that we have an engaged and informed public, because this is about your health, your publicly provided health care. And if we need people to know that above the 1-4 ratio, people have a 12-16% chance of being injured or suffering some event in the hospital for every patient that a nurse has above the established ratios. And I think that the general public as of right now believes that these ratios are already in place, which isn't in fact the reality. Specifically to your question though, what we're looking at within the municipalities is that these folks are really the most closely aligned with their constituents, and they're making decisions about building communities. And what we're looking for is raising their awareness of the impact, the positive impact that ratios can have within a community, and how we can be finding opportunities to partner with each other to advance the building of these municipalities, communities, so that it attracts young healthcare professionals that are going to choose to plant their roots and raise their families here. And this is really has the potential to be a symbiotic relationship. And as far as advancing this, both from the nurses, the public, and from municipal level governments.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is having municipalities sort of prioritize making their communities more livable for people who potentially could be nurses serving those areas.
Absolutely. You know, a prime example would be looking at housing considerations for professionals. And we know that that's something that that is percolating within the municipalities. And there's opportunities certainly for nurses like Melissa, who's coming and speaking to New West. She's also been all over the Lower Mainland speaking to municipalities about what it is that nurses need to be able to succeed within communities, as well as where we can be contributing to your initiatives as well.
One last thing I would want to ask is if there's more on the public side that you think can be done to advocate for nurse-to-patient ratios.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, one easy call to action is to check out the website ratiossavelives.ca. That really provides a foundational understanding of the concept of ratios, as well as where we are right now in that implementation phase. But at what I can most call to the public is that, as I said, this is your right as a British Columbian, as well as a Canadian, is to have comprehensive, publicly funded healthcare. And the government ran on a platform that this is what we're going to do for Canadians. We're going to provide the best healthcare, the best ratios for you. And we need for you to be holding those promises accountable by reaching out to the MLAs, saying, hey, where are we with ratios? This is a priority to me, as well as, you know, engaging in conversations with nurses about, hey, what is going on with ratios? Because we're happy to be having those conversations. And ultimately, you know, creating opportunities for advancing ratios. And there may be a time when the nurses will call on the public to say, hey, these obligations are not being met. Will you stand with us in support? And my hope is at that point, people will be educated enough about the ratio initiative and invested enough that they will be out supporting nurses. This isn't simply about ensuring nurses are, you know, in an environment that they can provide the care that patients deserve. It's also about addressing safety, because right now, there has never been a time in the healthcare system where so frequently nurses are being exposed to violence. And we know from research in other jurisdictions that with the implementation of minimum nurse patient ratios and effective retention strategies, that workplace violence is decreased. And as a part of that, we need to ensure that employers are putting in place effective mitigation strategies so that folks aren't having to respond to these situations. They are proactively being prevented. And if you can't, with a reasonably level of confidence, ensure that a nurse is going to go to work and they're not going to be exposed to extreme violence, it's going to be extremely difficult for us to be able to retain the nurses that we have and certainly recruit new ones.
Once again, that was our conversation with Tristan Newby, the vice president of the BC Nurses Union, on the Ratios Save Lives campaign. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
This is Bird Note. This bird song sounds like a nasally imitation of a robin, and the bird singing it is a rusty brown riff on a Baltimore Oriole. Called the orchard oriole, males have chestnut-colored breasts and black backs and wings, while females and immature birds are mostly yellow. Orchard orioles are very social birds, often with a few nesting pairs sharing the same large tree among stream banks, wetlands, and other shrubby areas. As early as late July, male orchard orioles head south for the winter. Their young are still just juveniles learning to find food, so they stick with the adult females, searching together for mulberries and other late summer fruits. Although common, these birds have been in a slow decline for over 50 years. When habitats along streams are damaged by grazing cattle, orchard orioles often can't use the area for nesting anymore. Protecting streamside vegetation helps these colorful birds, along with a whole suite of other species that depend on clean water and lots of leafy trees and shrubs. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Support for Bird Note is provided by Sarah Murner and Craig McKibben from Seattle, Washington, and generous listeners around the world.
Wandering Rhythms, Mondays from noon to two.
Join us in a weekly sample of music from planet Earth.
The strangest mixtape you will ever hear.
Desert blues.
Balkan punk.
Latin funk.
African psych.
Pigeon rap.
And anything and everything else you can imagine, equally represented by all continents.
Because good music is universal.
Wandering Rhythms.
Mondays at noon on CJSF 90.1 FM.
How many hits will it take for you to get with me? 'Cause deep in my soul, I've always known that I'm a Whitney. Are you willing to die to save my life? Stretched upside down in my limousine, I'm the Antichrist. Be mine.
reporting from Richmond, BC. This is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. Established in 1988, the Rick Hansen Foundation is a nonprofit organization that was founded by Rick Hansen following the completion of his Man in Motion world tour that helped raise $26 million towards spinal cord injury research. For over 35 years, the organization has worked to raise awareness, change attitudes, and remove barriers for people with disabilities. On May 8th, the Rick Hansen Foundation held an event at the Gulf of Georgia Cannery National Historic Site in Richmond, BC, celebrating the launch of the organization's newest venture, their Accessible Outdoors program. The newly launched program aims to make outdoor activities more accessible for people living with disabilities by inspiring new projects, initiatives, and policies that enable access and inclusion. Their first goal? To make the ocean a place that is accessible for all. During the event, Rick Hansen unveiled the Everyone Everywhere, a boat that takes into consideration the safety and comfort needs of people living with disabilities. The Rick Hansen Foundation identified boating as something that is often inaccessible for people living with disabilities due to a lack of design consideration for these populations. CJSF was able to take a tour of the vessel, where Hansen spoke at length of the new opportunities that it provides for people living with disabilities.
Yeah, the reason we wanted to start in the marine environment was because, first of all, that's one of the biggest barriers out there, is if almost every marina that exists, every boat that's being built, is actually not accessible. And so when you have a marina, a host marina like the Steveston Harbor Authority, that's actually thinking about accessibility, it's a shining example of what could be everywhere. The boats that are being built are built in general without accessibility in mind, and they're hard to adapt, even if they they're purchased by someone and someone has a stroke or an injury. They really feel like they actually have to get rid of the boat and maybe not even be able to participate again. And by the way, you know, accessibility is one of the fastest segments of the global tourism industry. And so when we bring people here to British Columbia and they go out whale watching, they go out, you know, sport fishing, they do ecotourism, we want them to be able to participate. And it should be good for Canada to be able to actually offer this and really attract more people to be here.
Hansen then went on to give a more detailed explanation of the possibilities that this boat provides.
In this boat, we want to be able to have the back section, which is typically, it's the working section. It's where you can actually go out and be a researcher and work on conservation. You can clean up, you know, ghost nets in the river that don't need to be there and put it into recycling, or you can work on habitat or do sonar assessment or tag fish and monitor them and release them, or you can be a recreational fisherman or fisherwoman. And so these are the opportunities in the back, where you can be outdoors doing a cruise and doing an ecotourism example, where a First Nations leader can be a host and they can actually have a disability and actually be on the water for the first time in their entire life, talking about their heritage and how important the river is to their nation and to all of us, and how we have to make sure that it's healthy so that it's sustainable for the future.
We then had the opportunity to go onto the vessel, where Hansen spoke on how the adaptable design of this boat can hopefully inspire other manufacturers to take note of these design choices.
You make it general for everybody, and then you can, if you put anything unique that's kind of fixed, you can actually, once you have the floor plan, you can easily adapt it. You can move it around or take it if somebody has different needs, or, like, for instance, if I purchase this and I was able-bodied, if I put like fixed seats in, then the boat has been built so that if someone came along and they were in a wheelchair, they could take the seats out, put the lift in, and it would be a simple adaptation because there's no structural barrier in the way. But if it was structurally changed, you know, where that open floor plan didn't exist, then it would cost hundreds of thousands of dollars and it would be prohibitive to make the change.
Hansen then provided some remarks on the time it's taken for himself, as well as the foundation, to reach this point.
we've come a long way in 40 years of everybody working towards making change, and there's a lot to celebrate, and I'm incredibly grateful for the many champions and people who have actually taken up that challenge and implemented solutions. But it's also a reality check of, you know, the fact that we've got a long way to go. So this is an example of yet another barrier being removed. So let's just keep going. We're not over.
For those wanting to learn more about the Rick Hansen Foundation's Accessible Outdoors program, as well as how to book an appointment on the Everyone Everywhere vessel, you can go to rickhansen.com. Once again, this has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
You know the days, you just don't want to say hi to nobody you know. You're just playing it low. That's the type of afternoon energy for the O today. Trying to catch a vibe and a flow. Doing dishes and miscellaneous chores and fishing in the worldwide, cause I gotta pull the dough in. Pretty much how it's going, like that. So when you see me and I ain't gleamy, I got the gear steady grinding in the thought box and I cannot stop. And talk shop unless we're talking similar. Whenever this occurs, it's best to stick with the program. Aside of that, it's almost dinner time. Of course it goes in a rhyme. I've been in my head, but working on it and not laying in bed. A couple of distractions, a couple of fractions, the math in action. So I'll pack ends, attract them through the passion. Since back when it's been on the same tip, and that's really what's happening. Yeah, dig it? That's what's happening. House like that, nigga. House like that, nigga. That's all I can say.
Something curious, something cultural, something unserious, sometimes serious, something mundane, something every day, though not even really that. Tune into Typically Tuesdays, airing every Monday. You heard that right, Monday. From 3 to 4 p.m., your hour of quasi-cerebral talk and tunes.
Welcome to Gardening with Embark. Joining me in the studio is Pablo Vimas from Embark Sustainability Society and the Gardens Manager for Embark.
Good morning.
We're into week 20.
Correct. It is the big week 20.
And one of the reasons we talk about it, we keep track of the weeks and stuff, because this really helps guide us when we need to do things throughout the season. And this is a big week.
That's right. So we go by weeks because going by day is quite difficult. And when we miss a day, we think like, oh, I missed the day. Right. But by a week, we have 7 days to, we can accomplish a task that is in our calendar. So yeah, big week 20 is the big week. This weekend is a long weekend. And this is the time that the garden must be planted with summer crops. So today we are going to talk about planting the summer garden. This is the time that you, everybody,